Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Keeping It Real with Beth and Darren.
Good morning, everyone.
It's finally Friday. I am so happy. How about you?
I am, I don't want to say I'm ecstatic, but I'm pretty happy it's Friday as well. We always like our Fridays.
We do. I got a couple of things.
I love our Fridays and I dread Sunday evening. Not as much anymore. I used to dread Sunday evenings when I knew I had to commute into New Jersey the next day. So I can't say I really dread Sunday evenings anymore.
No, now I just do.
Although you're not driving to New Jersey.
No, I'm not driving to New Jersey. I'm just at this point. I'm just driving to Scarsdale. But I have to say, I won't be driving to the city, but I'll be not driving to Scarsdale after next month. We have one more month in our place, and we're moving on out.
I really think that in terms of quality of life, one of the things that over time really does take a toll on somebody, and definitely took a toll on me before, was the kind of commute that you have. I remember Sunday evenings for a while, like for about 4 or 5 years, when 6 o'clock would roll around in the evening, and all I kept thinking about was the morning drive that I was going to do over to George Washington Bridge for that week, and coming over to George Washington Bridge on the way home. And if there's anything that's a recipe for depression, that was it. So I can say that I don't have that in my life anymore, which has really been a big change. I'm telling you, commuting, when you're looking at a job or wherever you're going to be in life, don't underestimate the impact that a commute can have on that job and your overall outlook on things and how you act on a daily basis, you know, with your colleagues, with your friends and your family, because it really wears the SH you know what out of you.
Well, but I have to say, my commute when I used to go into the city was a joy.
That's true. Beth used to love her commute.
I love my commute because we called ourselves the 848, which was we were the 848, and we would commute 33 minutes from Scarsdale to New York City. And in that time, we covered, it was like 10-10 wins. You give us 33 minutes, we'll give you our world.
It's more like you give us five women on the way to work who want to sit and talk. We'll give you everything to talk
Everybody
about.
Everybody just clear out. So it was me, our friend Robin, Susan, Mardine, Ronit, Erica. Those were the cast of characters over the years. And then sometimes it's this woman, Audrey. And we would look forward to it. We would have our group. We'd have our coffee. And we would just get it all in. And then sometimes even on the way back, we would coordinate so that we would text each other and tell each other, okay, I'm going to be on the 6:15 train or whatever, and we would meet in a certain car and have that on the way home, too.
All I can say is it's a good thing that you guys at the time were doing this at 8:48 in the morning, because if the four of you or the five of you, however many there were doing this at 6:58, you guys would have been kicked off the train.
Yeah, people would be giving. There were times when people were kind of annoyed at us, but,
right.
You know, we were
if
like the guys.
If you're one of those people on the train that just likes your peace and quiet, just want to
get out of our car
and read the paper, that was the wrong train for you to be on.
Yeah, so I did it for many years. And then as of, I guess, 2.5 years ago, when I went back into business, I stopped commuting. I mean, I go in once in a while, but not that often. But now that's going to change. I'm going to go back to commuting. And my friend Robin is super happy that she'll have a companion on the train. Although she catches the 8:30. And in light of the fact that we have this show, I don't really know if maybe once a week I'll make a special appearance with her. But I'm not going to rush out the door.
No, but we can do it a little bit earlier.
We could try to do it earlier. I just, you know, I don't think I could be keeping up a consistent 5 days a week making the 8:30 train. That's the good thing about being a business owner is that you get in when you get in.
But if you have a couple of friends to commute with each day, it makes the whole
it's great.
Process a lot easier. Like when I was commuting into New Jersey, my conversations were with the radio.
Yeah.
I was talking to Mike and Mike in the morning. And I was talking to Mike Francesa coming home. Mm-hmm. Well, when I say talking, just basically yelling.
Listening
and making comments myself. I think I've been doing this more over time. I find myself, I don't want to say like talking to myself like a, you know, crazy person in the street, but a lot of times like if I see something, if I'm by myself, I'll make a comment as if somebody else is next to me. I
Especially not your walking dog.
Right.
You're like talking to the canines that don't understand you.
I do. I actually talk to these dogs as I'm walking, as if they understand. I think some of
them
do.
They
do.
They have the mental capacity of a toddler. Again, our dog now is totally being defiant and definitely has the mental capacity of a toddler because she is just working us lately.
No, she's working you lately.
Yeah, my God.
I had my weekly basketball game last night with the 40 and older crowd over at a local school in New Rochelle. And my back is killing me again, as usual, post-play. Why I continue to do this to myself, I really don't know. I guess I just love playing the game and try to convince myself that my back will heal faster than it really does. But came back from the basketball game yesterday, and I saw Beth and our son in the usual couch position at that time of night. Beth was sort of dozing off. It was pre-10 o'clock, probably around 9:30 or so, and she was taking her 20 to 30-minute power nap before the beginning of her favorite show, which was the second to the last show of Parenthood.
Yes.
And then put our son to sleep. Daughter was doing God knows how many different things upstairs with her hair and other stuff that I don't even bother asking anymore. But I know you were getting ready for your show, and then that's when the hysterics started to begin again.
Oh,
I came
God.
Back down from my shower, okay? I had assumed that our dog was already taken outside for her usual bathroom break for the evening, and when I found out that she wasn't, I looked at Beth and I basically said, this one's not on me. It was already past 9:30. I think I was right to assume that she'd been taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 10 o'clock came and your show began, and that's when Santana said, I want to really stick it to you good.
Yeah.
And for about 20 minutes or so, just nonstop whining to go outside because she needed to go to the bathroom. And once again, that favorite show was interrupted by somebody in this house, whether it was me,
the third time in a row, or
animals. So
this is the third time in a row. I don't know what is going on. The good thing, thank goodness for DVR, so we really weren't.
Although I was actually laying on the couch at this point, watching a little bit of the show, and then Beth would come back in from taking Santana outside, and she'd say, what happened? And I would
make stuff up.
I would say, Craig T. Nelson just popped a whole lot of pills.
Yeah.
And I basically said, she just had the baby. And Beth's like, what? No. Okay, I got to go DVR now.
Yeah. So the one thing for those of you who didn't watch Parenthood and are planning to watch, then walk away or cover your ears.
Cover your ears.
Yeah, so they did tie up a bunch of storylines last night. It looks like Adam and Crosby are not going to be doing the luncheonette. It seems that Christina had an altercation or an argument with Crosby's wife. Of course, I can't think of her name right now. At the hospital when it was a false alarm for Amber for labor. And she kind of said, why did you guilt my husband back into going into the business? And then it became an all-out fight between everyone. And so that the luncheonette partnership is officially over. And then they showed like the whole school that Christina and Adam have created and how successful that is. So Christina has found her passion and she's happy. And then Joel and Julia got into some altercations a little bit because of the fact that he found like underwear in her drawer and realized that she was like had all these boyfriends while they were separated and whatever. So they're back together.
They're the worst part of the show.
No, they're not. They worked their stuff out, and then
let me cheat on a few more, a couple other guys, and then we'll work things out afterwards.
Yeah.
Right.
And then my favorite part is Sarah and Hank. I mean, it's like Ray Romano's character really has grown on me over the past couple of years. You know, I never expected him to be like a major character, and he's like a solid major character on that show. Like from comedy to drama, he's awesome.
He's basically his same character that he's in.
No, in Ice Age.
Except the people version.
Yeah, no, he's really good,
Mara.
And they're gonna they're getting married, and so they're gonna lead up to the wedding next week, and I just hope that Zeke stays alive until then. or they don't do it where it's like a cemetery. That'll just be
I think everybody out there, including myself, we're all hoping for that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and then Amber had the baby, and she named the baby Zeke. So for those of you who are planning on watching Parenthood, you don't need to now, because I just gave you the whole play-by-play.
And in terms of movies and stuff, our daughter came downstairs, and my wife asked her what her plans were for this evening. And surprising, she basically said she doesn't have any. So Beth said, well, maybe it'll be a good time for the four of us to actually go out tonight, either to a restaurant, to a movie. And I don't know what it is with our daughter. She always has to offer a little bit of resistance on almost anything we do. Not too much, but it's always something, it's a little bit of difficulty. So there's this real movie that she wants to see, whatever, some horror film, some scary movie. I have no idea what it is. And we basically say, no, we're going to see American Sniper.
Right.
And our daughter is the only one who like wants to know, well, what's the movie about? I'm like, stop asking what the movie's about. It's winning an Academy Award.
Exactly.
That's what we're going to see it. But so hopefully she'll, after school today, she'll be nice and calm and have an easy way about her, because when she has her easy way about her, she's pure pleasure. And when she doesn't have her easy way about her, it can become very adversarial.
I mean, the only other option is that we go see American Sniper and she brings a friend and go see a different movie and then we meet up after.
That is not an option, okay, in case our daughter is listening and have prepared. That is not an option. Disregard what mom just said.
Yeah, if you're listening with your friend, what was your friend's name?
We're not mentioning friends.
Oh, no, we're not mentioning. If you're listening with your friends for the first 20 minutes, you're not going to be able to go with somebody else.
I went to go pick up our daughter yesterday. One of the things I always find very interesting is if you ever get a chance to diagnose or analyze the evolution of an argument. Because I went to school yesterday to pick her up.
Mm-hmm.
We were having a very nice conversation coming home. And then the conversation just started to evolve. And all of a sudden, the topic of driving came up. And about her getting her permit. We're all fine so far. And then she talked about getting her junior license, which is still going to be a ways away. And then she said, yeah, and me and mommy were talking about cars and affordable leases. And that's when I started to slow down the car a little bit and started to listen to a little bit more. And she was talking about the possibility of getting a car when she when she has her license, her own car. And I actually seriously laughed. Like, not like a, you know, funny, like, I actually laughed. And she was really upset about it because there's no way that is going to happen. And she looked at me, why not? I'm like, first of all, we don't even need to discuss it right now because it's way into the future, or at least maybe not way, but still down the road. It's not something we need to discuss at the moment. And secondly, it's not going to happen. When I got my license, the car that I drove, I borrowed from my parents when it was available.
Right. When I went to college, they got me a car.
Right. Just because you become of age and get a driver's license does not mean that you are entitled to a car. That is something that I think maybe it's a new generation thing, that kids of that age say, I got my license, now you need to give me a car to use my license. That's not how it works. It works that you are now of age, you have a license, you will have the car to basically be my servant. When I need you to go ahead and drive our son somewhere, when I need you to go pick something at the grocery store, when I need you to drive yourself to school, whatever, if that, on those terms, that's when you'll have a car. And then if you fulfill those obligations, then you will have the car available to you for your own recreational purposes. If it's available, if mommy and I are going out somewhere and we have an extra car, you will have a car. But to have a third car in the house, because now we have another licensed driver, that's going to be an issue. Now, I will say that she offered up about paying for it herself, which, again, I don't think she or many kids really realize how expensive.
Well, they don't factor in the insurance.
Right.
It's like buying a house without property taxes.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I could save up for the deposit. Good. I can pay the monthly payments, possibly. right? I mean, I don't know how much a monthly payment on one of these leases.
Well, some of them are
that
not.
That you keep referencing.
There's some that are like under $200 a month, so that's why we looked at that.
Yeah, okay. Again, not looking at the all over. We talked about this a few podcasts ago. You take a small snippet of the information and you identify that.
Oh, yeah,
as
it's
a cost.
Car that still has like the windows that you roll up.
Oh, I miss those, by the way. I love the roll-up windows. They should actually bring that back.
Yeah, okay.
Get rid of the electric windows. It would make it a lot harder for our dog, Santana, to press a button and roll the window down herself.
I mean, think about it. If you were to, if ever your car goes into, like, goes off a bridge and goes into the water, I think the electrical system, like, malfunctions. You can't get out, right? And if you had a roll-up window...
I wasn't thinking about that today when I woke up about
it. Like, those are the statistics of how many people survive when their cars went into the water.
Well, maybe we can do some dry runs. Like, running a car off the road and going off the Pine Grove Boulevard into the water there.
The electrical system malfunction? How are you going to get out?
Maybe you think about happier thoughts. But the whole driving thing, I know... From now to when she actually gets a license, this is going to be one of those arguments that's going to resurface probably every couple of months. As we get closer, as more of her friends drive, and I'm sure more of her friends will have cars. I don't know what the arrangement is with their friends, their parents about those cars, whether the kids own them outright themselves, which I find hard to believe.
No, I mean, she had a friend, like an old. There's a senior that she knows whose grandparents got her the car. So, and it was a very nice car. So she, of course, is using that as her barometer, like, oh my God, her grandparents got her this awesome car. And yeah, I mean, that would be amazing, but that's not going to happen. So sure, there are going to be kids whose grandparents do a very nice thing and get them their first car. And there are going to be kids whose parents can afford to get that third car or whatever, or might even already have one. And then there are people like us who are just like, you know what, you don't need it right this second. A phone.
I got a car waiting for her right in our driveway.
Yeah, it's kind of a disaster.
It's a Honda Civic. It's got about 90-something thousand miles on it and got her name written all over it.
Well, I do think, though, when the time comes that my lease is up on my car, that we just sort
of... It seems like the lease in your car is up every month.
It is. But when it is up, and it is going to be up this coming December, I think what you and I need to do is... look at the price that we're paying on it and find two cars for the price of one and just get two smaller cars and call it a day. And
I tell you what, we're not getting another Tiguan.
Yeah,
I liked it.
It was a little bit of a lemon for a little bit, but they fixed it, and now I like it again. I mean, I like Volkswagen.
I did like Volkswagen. For a while, I thought we were having some good success with them, but... Of late,
It was just the dealer. I think it was the dealer.
Yeah. Well, maybe it is the dealer, but you know what? That's a reflection on the car company.
Well,
too.
Next week we're trying out that Camry. So next week we actually get a Toyota Camry to give a try. So I'm excited about that, and we'll see. They're sending me a sportier car. That's the one thing that I do like about having kids that are older. You wind up going from having your cute little car before kids to getting an SUV when they're a baby, to getting a minivan because you have so much stuff you need to transport. Then you downsize from the minivan, you go back to the SUV, and then as they're about to leave the nest, you go back to the sports car or the smaller vehicle. So we're at that point where I think when my lease is up, we're going to say, bye-bye SUV, let's get ourselves a nice, compact, maybe a hybrid.
Yeah, something definitely smaller, right?
Yeah, definitely something smaller. We don't need all that stuff. The only
I don't know if you cried, but you were really upset when you resigned to the fact that we were going to get a minivan.
I
remember before we got it, and you're like,
and then it was like a guillotine,
I want to get anything but a minivan. I was fighting it too. I didn't want to get a minivan. It just, everything about it just disagreed with me, disagreed with Beth. But when you look at the practical aspects of the minivan and everything that it offers and why families drive them, it's hard to argue.
Well, the only minivan, I have to say, the only minivan that I now realize is like the best minivan on the planet is the Chrysler Town & Country. We drove down to Florida one time. The other time, that one that we drove to Maine was not. It was like a Dodge or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And my friend Randy and John, it was funny. They actually had, they had had a Town and Country. They got a regular car and they went back to the Town and Country because they drive down to Florida a lot, and they wanted to have a car that they'd be able to take back and forth. And that car is tricked out, like, to the nth degree. There's a ton of room.
Did you just say tricked out?
It is tricked. It is not tripped out. It
I said
tricked
out.
Oh, tricked out, like, dude, where's whatever? It's like, check out my ride or whatever.
You're so gangster.
Yeah, I'm so gangster. Gangster mom. But, yeah, there's, like, of course, there's TVs in there and DVDs and lots of room. You could recline. I mean, it's like you could put a kitchen in that thing. It's amazing. And it rides really smoothly, as you can attest to because you did most of the driving in Florida.
Did. Yeah, I... That's usually the case. On all of these road trips, I don't know how other couples handle it, but I usually do, I think I've said this before, on a long road trip, 85 to 90% of the driving, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And
Steve Mike.
And I don't, is that just because we're the typical man-woman?
No, there are people that, there are women that like to drive and do it, and my problem is I don't care for driving at night, especially in areas that I don't know, and I just get kind of tired, that's all. You know, I get, when we were in Florida, the part of the road that I was supposed to cover was like St. Augustine to Orlando, and it was just a flat road of nothing. So there was nothing to look at, and it was just totally monotonous, and I just was getting tired, and it was bad, and you know, I need scenery. I need things to keep me occupied.
But I think it is interesting, right, in terms of stereotypes or in terms of couples and driving and who bears the responsibility of driving on long road trips. I would love to know if they actually did, like, a mileage breakdown of all the married couples out there. What percentage of the miles are driven by the men in the family? What do you think? If they looked at it, what do you think the percentage would be? For
probably the majority would be men do the driving. So, I mean, that's...
No, but do you think the men do 60%? Do you think they do 75%? Do you think they do 85%?
At least 70. I would give at least 70 just to...
I don't know if it's just us or if it's, you know, if that's just typical.
I have to Google it and see if there's ever a study that's been done. Maybe
like when
a car
we go,
company.
Like when we go out... This
you
way,
drive.
Right, when we go out...
But if you drink sometimes, I'll drive home.
No, absolutely. No, I had one alcohol beverage, either going to you.
Right.
But every time we step foot out of the house, we're going somewhere. We never look at each other like, do you want to drive? Do you want me to drive?
It's like, here's the key.
Here's the key. Like, it's almost automatic that I'm driving.
Right.
And I'm curious if other couples and families operate the same way.
I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't know if it's just a man-woman thing. I would love to know what gay couples do, right? Right? For men, like, how do they handle it?
I don't know.
Like, is it just a man thing, or is it just that you just identify the person?
As the driver.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it's not like, I mean, I do, obviously, I do drive all the time, but I just don't like driving for a long time.
Right. I don't like driving for a long time. I like driving for a fun time.
Right, exactly. I like driving, you know, I can drive into Manhattan. I know certain areas that I can drive to. I just kind of know the way, and it's just that I keep it easy. But you're a good driver, and I like keep that way, especially in the winter when the weather, I mean, last week, thank God we didn't drive. I mean, you drove a little bit, but on last Sunday was like a disaster. I would have been scared.
Well, no, anybody would have. Nobody Right. They're, Mario Andretti would have been scared driving.
I know. Like, you see all the videos this week. There's like one that was, oh, my God. There was like a huge truck that literally like just almost took out another car. It was like a near miss, thank goodness. And it just totally spilled out and I don't know what happened, you know, it was all the black ice, but that is just a scary place to be when you're on a highway and there's no place you can go.
So going back to what I was saying before, how I was talking to our daughter about getting a car and how, you know, I was saying about the analysis of a conversation, how it turns into
from good
pleasant,
to bad
from
to
very
worse.
Pleasant to a very heated debate. The other part that we were discussing yesterday when we got home, we started talking about colleges. And my head's spinning now because I can't believe I'm actually having these conversations, and I guess it's time that we do. But she started talking to me about her aspirations for certain universities, which I think is great, and I'm glad that she's actually starting to look at it, take it seriously. But she started talking about certain schools that she wants to attend, and I'm not going to say which ones, but schools that she wants to attend and certain schools that she definitely doesn't want to attend, and started, you know, basically telling me all these things. And I looked at her and I said, we're not ready to have this conversation now. And she looked at me in defiance and saying, why not? And I said, because you're still uneducated on this matter. And right now, all the information that she's getting, I think, is just coming from other friends that are maybe, you know, seniors in the school, you know, a couple of things that she might read here and there. But I'm sorry, in 10th grade, as much as you could start beginning the process of gathering information, I just don't think she's in a position to really say, oh, I'm definitely not going here, and I'm definitely doing this and not that. I'm like, whoa, slow it down, okay? Why don't we just be on a fact-finding mission for a while? We still do have some time before she decides which college she wants to go to. We can go about this in an organized, methodical way. And I said, I'm not going to force you, or mommy's not going to force you to go to any school that you don't want to go to, which I don't. But at the same time, you're just not going to get to go to any school that you choose, just assuming you get accepted, just because that's where you want to go. There's got to be a happy compromise that encompasses a lot of facts, a lot of factors, one being tuition, two, geographic distance, three, you know, how likely, the likelihood of success coming out of school. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it other than just this is where I want to go.
Yeah.
Right? And that part got a little bit heated yesterday, but it was fine. Usually the good thing with our daughter is we get our arguments. I think our daughter has learned from us too. Like Beth and I, we have our fights. We get into some a little bit of shouting, not shouting, but we get into some pretty heated debates and we get it off our chest. Say what we want to say, and then we move on. Right? Right. It doesn't linger.
No. I mean, it
may resurface at some point.
It absolutely resurfaces, but it doesn't. It's not one of those things where it's pent up, and that's what I'm happy about is that we get it out, we figure out how we're going to resolve this, and move to the next.
Like the thing point. Is, there's nothing really to resolve here at this point, right? It's just conversations
right.
that I'm having, but I'm trying to instill in her. This idea, this is very difficult because I know I did this myself when I was younger, again, that to have an open mind to things, to digest all the information, not just a portion of the information that you like or want to hear, digest all the information, not just about colleges, but anything, and then with everything that you have at your disposal, then make an informed decision. And that's very difficult, I think, as a teenager, when you are getting fed information from only one source. And that one source is usually friends, maybe it's on Facebook, whatever, social media. But their idea of being, quote unquote, well-informed is a lot different than what I think you and I believe is being well-informed.
Well, I mean, and look, when I was making my decisions about colleges at the age of teen.
And that's the thing I said to
don't listen
I said,
to your mother.
I said, whatever you do, do not listen to mom.
Well, no. When I was making my decisions, I didn't want to go to a SUNY school, so I understand her now saying she doesn't want to go to a SUNY school. Which, you know, and the thing is that SUNY schools are really good. I just wanted to go to a campus that was a beautiful campus that gave that.
This is where she's misinformed. The reason why she doesn't want to go to a SUNY school
is
because she wants now to be further away from home, and she has this idea that all the SUNY schools are really
like around the corner,
are really sure, close by.
Like
they're
SUNY
really
purchase?
Close by. And she mentioned another school that she does want to go to, which I'm not going to say. That she hears about and would love to go to, possibly. And I said to her, I said, do you realize what you're saying right here? Many of the SUNY schools that you say are not only better, but are further away geographically than here than this other school, which is out of state. You just automatically assume that school is further away.
Right.
So,
but the other piece of this whole puzzle is that if you are a parent of a child that's younger right now, I don't want to give you sticker shock, but you need to be aware, because I've been clicking on tuition and fees now just to kind of get myself in the mindset of, oh my God, is this really going to cost this much? And just so you know, I mean, if you're in state, in certain places, whether it's New England or California or any place else, a lot of these in-state prices are great, but you're either going to have to buy a summer home quick and establish permanent residency there in order to save that money. In fact, I brought that up yesterday to Darren.
Beth, maybe we move to Maine.
Beth thinks she
has a new way to work around a system, as if all these colleges and universities aren't onto this. But
right.
Go ahead.
So I was like, let's get a house in Maine, and then we'll make it our primary residence. And then if she needs to go to school in New England, she could get the, because they have two different things. You could either get the in-state tuition fee, so if you live in the state and going to the university, you get that, or you get the New England fee. So if you live in New England and you go to a school in Massachusetts or Maine or Rhode Island, you get a reduced fee for that too. I think that's a really cool deal. I mean, I've always wanted to, you know, have a house there anyway, so maybe one day, whatever. But knowing our daughter, she'll wind up going to like California, and that'll just blow holes in my whole plan. But anyway, when I was looking at prices for the out-of-stater, you're looking at anywhere from, and this is not Ivy League, but like a regular university, $40,000 walking in the door. $40,000. That's just walking in the door of at a regular university. If you live in state, it's half.
And if you want your kid to be fed during his or her time in college, it's going to cost even more money.
Probably. Probably. But if you stay in state, then you're talking more between $23,000 to $30,000. So that's why you make the case, and I think SUNY schools are even less than that. So that's why you try to make the case to your kids to go to the SUNY or even like a CUNY school. But unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen. So we're looking at that $40,000 or more number for the next 4 years when she goes. So that's four weddings. That's four bar mitzvahs. That's a lot of Jake. So if you are younger and you have a 529 plan that you've established for your kids, put money into it. Even if it's
I'm hearing stuff now. This is stuff I got
to
look into.
Oh, not to do it?
No, not to do it. But as part of Obama's plan is to start taxing these 529 plans.
Oh,
now,
God.
If that is true.
Well, he only has two more years left, so maybe he'll get him out.
I hope that that's not.
Well, one more year left. It's already 2010. Yeah, he can't do that much. He's trying to make community college free. And
yay!
But hopefully he won't do that. But I almost look at it like, you know, you put money away in your 401k plan, which is great. But I'm almost wondering if maybe as you're just mindlessly doing that, you are really allocating, well, make sure that this out of my 401k is really going to the 529.
You really can't, because they're going to be going to school. They're going to before you can
right. But what I'm saying is that when you work for an employer and you put money into a 401k, there should be an option, like when you're filling out the form,
to put into a
529 at the same time.
Maybe they do that. We just didn't.
I mean, but I think that that's something, because if you're not paying attention and you just automatically put away, let's say $160,000, and then it comes time for school and you've got that money, that's amazing. And you should be thinking about it, and I'm the last person, unfortunately, to offer advice, because we've put money away, but not enough. And I think that it does make sense that if we had, you know, been doing it from the beginning, we'd be like, sure, you can go to 5,000 miles away, not a problem.
That's a good plan.
That's a good plan. So we'll see what happens with her. And at this point, she has all these schools sending her emails, which, you know, to check them out. But she told me that all of her friends are getting the same emails. So we're not getting Harvard and Yale sending us any correspondence at the moment.
Not yet. It's still coming.
Yeah, sure. I'm just checking the inbox every day.
And I'm on the lookout.
Yeah, exactly.
Although something did come in from Cornell.
For you.
To me. And my daughter looked at it like, what's that? And I'm like, they just asked for different money.
Right.
So I'm curious. Are you aware of or know who's in the Super Bowl at this point? I want to see how on top you are of sports.
The New England Patriots, because they're in this whole deflate gate thing.
Okay. Oh, that's very good.
They're all in trouble because they were deflating.
But do you know who they're playing at least? our son's at the table doing
the
hand gestures.
The Eagles?
No, they're not playing the Eagles. No.
Right. Something flying and swimming.
Seattle, can you say
Seahawks.
That? Seahawks.
Something that flies and swims.
Right.
All right, I get it. Thank you.
It's funny, though, that you have part of the information because you know about all the scandal.
News. Yeah.
The scandal, the news
well,
going
like
on with
CNN.
It's funny, you just shut off the entire other half of the tea. But have you been following the whole controversy going on?
Yes.
Do you understand what's going on?
Okay, let me give you my layman's terms version.
Okay.
Okay. Supposedly, the quarterbacks sometimes like their balls deflated.
Watch how you say those
right.
balls.
They like them blown up.
They like their footballs deflated. Yeah.
Right. They like their footballs blown up a certain way.
Can you imagine what that headline would read? That's just saying quarterbacks like their balls deflated.
Anyway. I'm not a sports analyst. So sometimes they prefer their footballs to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the Patriots like for their footballs to be deflated a bit. And after the game, but it's against regulation. It's supposed to be a certain size no matter what. It's like you might be doing it for practice, but you can't do it on game day.
Very good.
All right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the game, after they had won, it was determined that 11 of the balls that they used,
correct, yes,
were deflated.
This is actually amazing. It's amazing that your level of detail on this story, which is spot on, that you can get this. Okay, you can filter through all this information and basically regurgitate it. But you couldn't say who the other team is that they're playing in the Super Bowl. That's the part I have trouble comprehending.
Because I didn't watch the game, but I read the news. And I was so supposedly the Patriots have been under fire in the past for doing things that are not that kosher. Like they filmed other teams playing on their turf so that they were kind of knowing what they were doing before the game. So they're not the most honest team in the league.
Right. And if anybody out there thinks that what happened with Brady and the Patriots isn't a big deal, all I can say is you're wrong.
So then here's my question. When it's their turn, they throw their deflated balls and they do what they do, and then when it's the other team's turn, they take their balls?
No, I think they're using the same ball, but certain,
okay.
Certain quarterbacks like a certain size football over other ones. It is an advantage for some, not for others. But even that aside, whatever you... People say, well, look at the score of the game. Does it really matter? They scored by 45-7. They would have won anyway. That's missing the entire point. It doesn't matter that they won by such a large margin. The fact is that they cheated. The fact is that Belichick is a notorious cheater. And now you have a quarterback who I like a lot, and, you know, arguably one of the best quarterbacks of all time, and some will make the argument the best quarterback of all time. And after this, you could still make that argument, but he is, without a doubt, a cheater. And now he's basically saying that he did, you know, his story is so distorted in terms of what happened and that he didn't know about it and that some guy, you know, he received these footballs from whoever it is that does the equipment, that he had no idea that the balls were underinflated.
But, okay, wait,
there is nobody that is working in the equipment room, any of these, for any of these teams that is taking it upon themselves to go ahead and underinflate all these footballs for the quarterback to use.
But okay, but here's my question. Why isn't the refs or whoever, like providing the equipment, why are the balls coming from both teams?
Well,
that's
a great question, and that's part of this whole controversy too, is that with the amount of money that the NFL has, I don't know, $8 to $10 billion
can't afford 12 balls.
Why is it that the teams are being given
the task of
handling the footballs during the game? Why isn't this handled by a neutral? You know,
yeah, it has to be handled by a neutral thing. I mean, what do they do in baseball? I mean, they're baseball, but
yeah.
They're like, what
I'm
are they
sure,
doing?
I'm not sure what they do. Teams supply the baseballs or the major league? I'm not sure. But this is just another reason why I have been so down on the NFL. This year, I used to just love watching the game, and I still do. I'm gonna watch the Super Bowl, so I'm not gonna stand here and say I'm protesting it. But it's just another reason why I think the NFL is gonna have its reputation hurt for years to come between things like this with cheating scandals, and more importantly, things with domestic violence, and with all these NFL players being like, you know, instead of the National Football League, it's the National Felon League. Like they just gotta clean up their act.
Yeah,
it is. It's very sad, and it's very disheartening to see case after case after case. But going back to Brady and to Belichick, you know, if you're a New England Patriots fan, all I can say is if you're comfortable knowing that your team
has some deflated balls on their hands,
a couple of cheaters on it, then if you're okay with that, then I guess who am I to argue? But that's what they are. They're cheaters, and there's no other way to describe it. So, but I'm so happy that you know the whole story about that, and you know it very well. That's great.
If
you take out the actual sports component to a game and bring out the human element to it, that knows everything.
Yeah, I can tell you about Stuart Scott.
Right,
like,
doesn't
he
matter,
passed
it
away.
Right,
was
doesn't
really
matter,
upsetting.
Right, that's true, true. It doesn't matter what the subject matter is. If you can tie it to a personal aspect, you know, to personalize it to them and not so much what goes on with the game or whatever, with a company, in terms of finances, whatever the topic might be, if there's a human interest story to it, Beth is right on top. You are. You're all over it.
Well, but here's the thing about sports is when I went to journalism school, they said some of the most talented writers were sports writers because they had to be incredibly descriptive, especially this is before television. So Gabe Talese was like, he's an author, but he was also a sports writer. And I think he wrote about like wrestling or boxing he wrote about. And they said he was a brilliant writer because he was so descriptive and he was able to tell a story with his words. And if you watch ESPN, like when we're at the gym and if ESPN is on, I might turn it on because they're telling me the story of some sad sack who, like, you know, fell on hard times or grew up, like, super poor but managed to beat the odds and now is a, you know, star football player. And, like, I can tell you the whole story about this person's life. And I love that. And that's what sports journalists do. And even in the newspaper, like, they'll tell a story and they make it more exciting. And to me, that part of it is my favorite part of sports, except for, you know, I watch tennis and there's certain sports I actually enjoy to watch.
Tennis. I wanted to make sure that we're playing.
Yeah, we got to get back into that. But anyway, but what I'm just saying is that there is an element of sports. And it's funny, I was out with a friend of mine who is a TV producer of news. And she said she used to want to go into sports. And then she decided it wasn't for her because she doesn't like that aspect of stats and all the other stuff of the game. And I said, well, there's a whole other area of sports you could go into, which is really the storytelling part. And to me, I love that. Like, if you watch the Olympics and then you hear all the stories about how so-and-so made it to the Olympics and all that, it's all, you got to be a storyteller to make it in sports.
And I will say, in terms of sports, Beth has another angle, too, which she's trying to get me to communicate to certain parents out there that I coach, in whether it's baseball, basketball, whatever, that Beth wants to make kids aware out there that there are other ways to be part of the sports industry, no matter what sport it is, without actually playing the sport itself. Beth is a big proponent of knowing what your talents are and what your limitations are, and that finding another way to be part of something, although not actually having to participate in it. For example, she likes to talk about, well, you know what, if the kid's really not good at, say, baseball, maybe it's time to start looking into other sports, or if you really love baseball that much, maybe go into broadcasting. Maybe become a sports columnist.
Or a sports photographer,
or a photographer,
or a cameraman, or the security guard at Met Stadium. Or you could sell the popcorn and the hot dogs. I mean, there's so many different things you can do. But I do feel that as a kid gets older and is playing team sports and is struggling, it's time for individual sports. Start looking into golf and tennis, and that will stay with you for life. I'm a tennis player. I play doubles, but I know my limitations, and I think that that's better for a kid, so not to feel the pressure and not to feel that it's all on them and, oh, it's because of you lost the game. Who needs that headache, right?
I agree, but there are so many parents out there that will take exception to what you're saying.
I know they will, but you know what? It is not you 30 years ago. It is your child. And think about what's going through your child's head. Whenever I played a tennis match and my father was there, and if I missed the ball, I'd hear him from the stands. Ugh. He now, when he comes and watches my son's game, he'll make comments. And I'm like, Dad, keep it down. But it's like, that's the thing. And you're putting way too much pressure on your kid. Talk to them, have an honest conversation. Do you really want to play this sport? Or maybe there's something else we can do. I see you're great at photography. Maybe you could be the head photographer for the team. There's a hat for everyone. There's a thing for every, you know, whatever.
Why don't you interview all the kids in your team after the game and write something about it?
Exactly. Exactly. So, parents, if you're listening, it's not about disagreeing with me. Have a conversation with your kid and see if they actually want to be on that team and play. All right? That's what I, it's not about you. It's about them and their self-esteem. And that's the way to build their self-esteem, is to push them in the direction of the things that they can do well.
I don't disagree at all. I love it if people could start looking at things through those lines like that. That would be great.
It's not your life. It's theirs.
That's very good.
And on that note, we got to get our sons to school so he can learn some stuff
and get this weekend started. Exactly. I'm going to get my weekend started a little bit earlier than everybody else.
Okay. Yeah, not me. All right. So on that note, thanks for stopping by.
Stay classy.